In the realm of dark romance, few novels have captured readers' imaginations quite like Creation's Captive. This haunting tale of supernatural bonds and ancient powers has become a book talk sensation, with millions of videos discussing its complex characters and cliffhanger ending. What began as author Melody Joanne's personal escape from reality has transformed into a cultural phenomenon that explores the fine line between destiny and free will. Even celebrities like Taylor Swift have been spotted with a copy, fueling speculation about the book's influence on her latest album's supernatural themes. The novel's exploration of trauma and healing resonates deeply with readers, creating a community of fans who find solace in protagonist Vivian's journey from victim to someone discovering her own power. As we dive into this dark fantasy world, prepare to question everything you thought you knew about fate, freedom, and the price of power. 4 years before the main storyline unfolds, Vivian's life takes a supernatural turn while walking home from jazz band practice, where she plays second chair trumpet. Trudging through flooded soccer fields on an unseasonably cold October evening, she encounters a translucent blue figure, a ghost, who appears suddenly before her. The spectral vision, shimmering like moonlight on water, causes Vivian to stumble backward into icy water. The ghost's form wavers in the twilight, its edges rippling like disturbed pond water, as it silently gestures behind her. Vivian panics and runs home, her wet clothes heavy and clinging, only to face her narcissistic mother's wrath for being late rather than concern for her soaked condition. Her mother, Miranda, obsessed with appearances and her flourishing, beautiful you pyramid scheme beauty business, berates Vivian for potentially damaging her online reputation by not being available to post about products. Miranda's carefully curated social media presence demands constant family participation, regardless of personal circumstances. The physical and emotional contrast between them is striking. Vivian, with her auburn hair, constellation of freckles and curves, versus her mother's meticulously maintained blonde perfection, achieved through weekly salon visits and religious adherence to her own product line. Their interaction reveals years of emotional neglect that have shaped Vivian's sense of self-worth, evidenced by the way she unconsciously makes herself smaller in her mother's presence, shoulders hunched, voice barely above a whisper. Later that night, while scrolling through local news alerts, Vivian discovers that a drunk driver crashed into a century-old oak tree on her usual path home, exactly where she would have been if not for the ghost's warning. The driver, she learns, died on impact at precisely 6:47 p.m., the exact time she normally passed that spot. This realization sends chills down her spine. Had she just narrowly escaped a fated death like in horror movies? The thought plagues her dreams that night, mixing with memories of every supernatural thriller she'd ever watched. The next day, Vivian's world shatters completely when she steps outside to find ghosts everywhere, translucent blue figures scattered throughout her neighborhood, some following living people like faithful pets, others wandering aimlessly through walls and cars. She counts 17 spirits before reaching the end of her street alone. Despite her internal panic, she forces herself to maintain normalcy, grateful that at least the spectral visitors remain mostly silent, though their presence feels like a constant cold draft against her skin. When the ghost girl from the soccer field reappears in Vivian's bedroom that evening, illuminating the space with an ethereal blue glow, she frantically warns Vivian through elaborate charades not to ride in a car to prom. The ghost's movements become increasingly desperate as she mimes a steering wheel, then makes crashing motions. Despite Vivian's desperate attempts to convince her best friend Emily to walk instead, creating excuses about exercise and fresh air, Emily insists on driving with her boyfriend Jackson. Running through pouring rain to reach the school, her formal dress soaked and muddy, Vivian arrives too late. Emily's boyfriend Jackson's car has crashed into Miller's Lake. While Emily survives with minor injuries, Jackson dies, leaving Vivian crushed by guilt for failing to prevent the tragedy despite the supernatural warning. What begins as a mysterious encounter with the supernatural becomes the catalyst for a journey that will challenge everything Vivian understands about life, death, and her own identity. The ghosts that entered her life that day were just the beginning, a destiny far greater and more terrifying than she could have imagined, a destiny that would force her to confront not only the spirits of the dead, but also the haunting reality of her own gifts and responsibilities. The tragedy at prom marks only the beginning of Vivian's suffering. In a horrifying turn of events, masked figures, led by her supposedly best friend Emily, kidnap Vivian. Emily accuses her of two unforgivable crimes, murdering Jackson and practicing witchcraft. The group subjects Vivian to brutal torture, pelting her with sharp rocks until she loses consciousness, exploiting her claustrophobia by threatening imprisonment, and abandoning her bound and injured in the dark forest. Hours later, Vivian regains consciousness alone as rain begins to fall. In a moment of desperate courage, she breaks her own thumb to slip free of the ropes binding her. As she flees through the woods with a sprained ankle, she encounters something far more terrifying than her human attackers, a horrifying ghost-like creature with a gaping maw that seems intent on consuming her. In what becomes a pivotal moment of discovery, Vivian realizes the creature responds to her emotions. When she panics, it attacks. When she calms herself, it hesitates. Through this terrifying encounter, she makes an astonishing discovery. By expressing empathy rather than fear, she emits a silver light that transforms the creature into a peaceful ghost. This transformed spirit then helps Vivian find her way to safety. This traumatic night fundamentally changes Vivian in ways that extend far beyond her physical scars. The betrayal by those she trusted most leaves emotional wounds that will never fully heal. Yet from this crucible of suffering emerges a power she never knew she possessed, the ability to free tortured spirits through empathy. 4 years later, Vivian has built a new life on the East Coast, having secured a scholarship to a remote college far from her hometown and unsupportive mother. Though physically healed, she carries visible scars from the stones that cut her and invisible ones from the betrayal she endured. After spending over a year as a shut-in, she's cautiously built a new identity and purpose. What began as a nightmare has transformed into a calling. Vivian now actively seeks out faceless spirits to free them through her unique gift of empathy. While exploring a tide-dependent cave rumored to have pirate connections, she encounters and frees a Viking spirit before nearly becoming trapped herself by rising waters. The Viking ghost appears and guides her out just in time, saving her from becoming another trapped soul in the cave. Though exhausted by these supernatural encounters, Vivian finds meaning in helping spirits find freedom from their tortured existence, even while she remains trapped in her own guilt and trauma. Little does she know that her ability to transform these spirits is far from random. It's a sign of a power that will soon draw dangerous attention from beings beyond her world. Life at college offers Vivian a semblance of normalcy she desperately craves. Walking through a windswept forest to campus, she mentally threatens the swaying trees not to fall on her, a small glimpse into her persistent anxiety despite her fresh start. She's heading to an early morning tutorial taught by the psychopathic Dr. Richard Parnard, who schedules classes at ungodly hours. In class, her friend Sarah brings her coffee and teases her about her non-existent love life, noting that despite being a knockout, Vivian never dates. Their friend Connor arrives and flirts shamelessly with both women, particularly reminding Vivian about when he discovered her collection of explicit romance novels. Their friend Isaac arrives late, earning embarrassing attention from the professor. As Dr. Parnard lectures about the digital age, Vivian's mind wanders to the ghosts on campus. Unlike the faceless spirits she can help, regular ghosts ignore her attempts at communication, treating her interest as an invasion of privacy. This distinction between types of spirits hints at a supernatural hierarchy Vivian doesn't yet understand. Vivian reflects on how Sarah, Connor, and Isaac adopted her into their friend group months earlier, with Sarah's forceful but well-meaning approach breaking through Vivian's self-imposed isolation. Their friendship represents a healing balm to her wounded spirit, though she keeps them at arm's length, never revealing her supernatural experiences or traumatic past. When the friends organize a surfing expedition, Vivian takes her time in the water, struggling to balance on her board in the fog. Separated from her friends, she suddenly feels a shock through her left hand when it touches the water. Looking down, she sees blue tendrils of light extending from her hand into deeper water. Curious and seeking answers about her supernatural experiences, she follows the lights despite her better judgment. The further she paddles, the stronger the tugging sensation becomes, until suddenly she's yanked underwater. Disoriented in the dark waters, she struggles to surface as her glowing left hand continues pulling her down. Just as her vision starts to blacken, Sarah grabs her and pulls her to safety. That night, Vivian experiences the most vivid dream of her life, fighting as a guardian protecting an ancient temple in Atlantis. Unlike her typical nonsensical dreams, this felt completely real. The robes and braided hairstyle matched those of the ghost girl who saved her years ago. Could this ancient warrior somehow have imprinted her memories on Vivian? Whatever happened must be connected to the glowing blue threads that led her into the water. These mysterious experiences suggest Vivian's supernatural journey is far from over. In fact, it's only beginning to reveal its true scope and significance. The blue tendrils pulling her into the ocean, the vivid dreams of ancient Atlantis, and her ability to transform tortured spirits are all pieces of a cosmic puzzle that will soon come together in ways she cannot imagine. Vivian's relatively peaceful college existence shatters when a supernatural being named Need appears in her apartment. After proving her powers by teleporting them to an ancient pyramid, Need reveals a startling truth. Vivian is a keeper who holds the key to a powerful destroyer, beings who bring catastrophe when needed to maintain cosmic balance. Need explains that a crisis has emerged. A rogue council member named Morgana has stolen the key to their oldest destroyer and plans to plunge the realms into darkness. Vivian is tasked with finding her own destroyer, awakening it, and using it to kill Morgana's destroyer before catastrophe strikes. With this ominous warning, Need disappears, leaving Vivian alone and bewildered. "You have the key to a destroyer," Need had told her. "You must find him, wake him, and use him to kill Morgana's destroyer before it's too late." Examining her wrist but seeing no visible key, Vivian decides she must find this destroyer quickly rather than wait to be found by hostile supernatural forces. Following the pull she feels toward the water, she breaks into the surf shock at night and takes a board out into the ocean. Far from shore, Vivian follows the blue lights deeper into the sea until they point straight down. Realizing she must dive to reach the destroyer, she abandons her board and plunges into the depths. The pull grows stronger as she swims deeper, but her lungs burn for air. Just as her vision darkens and water floods her lungs, she sees a large sphere of blue light containing a sleeping person. As she touches the sphere, the person's eyes lock with hers before she drowns. Vivian wakes up coughing water onto the beach, with someone's hands on her, the man from the blue sphere, now giving her CPR. He's in his late 20s with shoulder-length hair and striking blue eyes, completely naked after his emergence from the water. When they return to her apartment, he reveals himself as Leon, the destroyer she's bound to. In a shocking revelation, Leon tenderly asks, "Is it really you?" and calls her Cassandra. When Vivian corrects him, he explains that Cassandra was his lover who died when Atlantis fell over 10,000 years ago. He believes the council brought back her soul and gave her his key, binding them together by destiny. "You were made for me," he whispers as they drift off to sleep. It's destiny. This encounter marks the beginning of a complex and often troubling relationship between Vivian and Leon. The bond between Keeper and Destroyer creates an intense physical and emotional connection that clouds Vivian's judgment and free will. Leon's possessive nature quickly becomes apparent as he declares she belongs to him and will never be free of their bond until death. What should have been a partnership to save the realms becomes a power struggle as Vivian fights to maintain her autonomy while Leon attempts to dominate her completely. The key she holds, the power to unleash his full destructive potential by removing his collar, becomes both her greatest leverage and her greatest vulnerability in their dangerous dance of power and desire. As Vivian spends more time with Leon, she begins to uncover layers of deception surrounding her role as a keeper. When they visit the Council's magnificent castle, a breathtaking structure larger than her entire college campus, she's struck by its opulence and the stark class divisions it represents. The diversity of beings is astounding. Elegant fairies with 9-foot wingspans, bear-like creatures who speak, water-dwelling people, and even a human-sized cat lady. Most disturbing to Vivian are the ghost servants everywhere, including children, who Leon callously describes as not even people anymore. When she expresses disgust at their unpaid servitude, Leon reminds her not to judge an entire realm so quickly. This casual acceptance of what appears to be spiritual slavery hints at the morally ambiguous nature of the Council's rule. While exploring the castle, Vivian slips away from Leon and discovers an enormous library with turquoise doors carved with woodland scenes. Inside this paradise of multiple floors and stained glass, she overhears Need speaking with someone named Raiden about a mortal they've imbued who remains unaware of their plans. Need insists, "Everything hinges on this. We cannot let her loose from our control." Vivian hides until they leave, then reunites with Leon, concealing what she's heard, while resolving to spy more carefully. Could she be the mortal they're discussing? What control do they intend to maintain over her? Later, Leon takes Vivian to the Black Market District, a stark contrast to the Council's opulence with its dilapidated buildings, cobbled roads, and atmosphere of danger. There, they meet Magnus, a stunningly beautiful man with dark skin, luscious curls, and vivid green eyes, who provides information about Morgana in exchange for tasting Vivian's energy. Magnus reveals that Morgana freed her destroyer, Sin, millennia ago, and they've been searching for someone in the mortal realm. This information conflicts with what Need told Vivian, suggesting the Council has been less than truthful about the situation. As Vivian pieces together fragments of truth from various sources, she begins to question everything she's been told. Is she truly a keeper chosen to save the realms, or is she a pawn in a cosmic game between powerful beings? Was her ability to see ghosts and transform faceless spirits truly random, or part of a larger design? And most troublingly, is her bond with Leon truly destiny, or something artificially created to serve the Council's purposes? The more Vivian learns about the supernatural realms and their politics, the more she realizes that distinguishing allies from enemies is nearly impossible when everyone seems to be manipulating her for their own ends. The complex power dynamics between Vivian and Leon come to a head when he reveals his plan to return to the mortal realm to lure Morgana and her destroyer, Sin. Leon intends to pretend to consider an alliance before ambushing and killing them both, but first he needs Vivian to unlock his collar to access his full destructive powers. When Vivian expresses concern about risking innocent lives in her realm, Leon dismissively suggests that sacrificing a sliver of humanity is worth saving all realms. His callous attitude toward human life reveals the fundamental difference in their values. To Leon, mortals are expendable in service of the greater cosmic balance. As Vivian refuses to unlock his collar, the bond between them begins burning intensely, creating fog in her mind and making her body tremble with resistance. Leon uses their physical connection to manipulate her, igniting overwhelming desire through their bond while demanding she acknowledge she belongs to him. "I lead, Vivian," he declares with cold authority. "I lead and you follow. I protect you and you obey me." In a moment of clarity amidst the bond-induced fog, Vivian remembers his plan to risk her home and his demands that she obey him as his possession. Something within her rebels against this control, and she screams, "No!" A surge of unexpected energy bursts from her, sending Leon flying across the room and slamming into the opposite wall. This display of power shocks them both. Leon, enraged, demands to know what she's hiding. "Keepers are not meant to hold any kind of power. Mortals are not supposed to hold power," he roars. "What the fuck are you?" When Vivian insists she doesn't know the source of her abilities, Leon's fury escalates. He traces a burning pattern on her neck, sealing off her power, and announces he's leaving her alone to speak with Need, despite knowing the bond will cause her excruciating pain in his absence. "If this is what it takes for you to finally stop fighting us and give in to your destiny, then so be it," he says coldly, before disappearing with a final declaration, "Mine, Vivian. You are fucking mine." Left alone in agony as the bond punishes her for Leon's absence, Vivian discovers that her power remains despite Leon's attempt to seal it. When she encounters another forsaken spirit, her silver light emerges, transforming it into a young woman in leather armor who beams before fading away. This moment of resistance, both against Leon's control and against the limitations he tried to impose on her power, represents a crucial turning point in Vivian's journey. Despite the manipulations of both Leon and the Council, something within her refuses to be controlled, suggesting she may be far more than the simple keeper they believe her to be. As Vivian floats in the ocean, trying to soothe the burning pain caused by Leon's absence, a large hand clamps over her mouth from behind. "Sorry, mortal, this won't feel very good," says a deep voice that isn't Leon's. The ground disappears beneath her as she's wrenched from the realm. The perspective shifts to Sin, Morgana's destroyer, who observes the unconscious mortal woman in his arms. He notes how small and weak she appears, nothing like the warrior they faced in Atlantis. He's surprised by her injured state, bleeding from multiple cuts with a piece of wood lodged in her arm and bruises circling her neck. Sin reflects on how they've monitored Vivian for 4 years, waiting for her reunion with Leon to fulfill some prophecy. Their plans changed when they learned she might be in danger from Leon himself. Despite his disgust at her existence as what he considers a council puppet, Sin is intrigued that she apparently fought back against Leon and didn't release him from his collar. Entering Morgana's castle, he holds her tighter, wondering if this kitten might indeed have claws. The story ends on this cliffhanger, with Vivian now in the hands of those she was warned were enemies, yet who might have rescued her from Leon's abuse. This dramatic turn raises profound questions about the nature of good and evil in this supernatural world. Are Morgana and Sin truly the villains Need and Leon painted them to be? Or could they represent another side of a complex conflict where neither party has clean hands? Most importantly, what is Vivian's true role in this cosmic struggle, and what powers might she possess that even she doesn't yet understand? As the first book concludes, readers are left wondering whether Vivian's destiny truly lies with Leon as his keeper, or whether her unexpected powers and resistance to control point to a different path altogether. The prophecy Sin mentioned suggests her importance extends beyond what the Council has revealed, potentially positioning her not as a pawn, but as a pivotal player in the balance between realms. The journey from seeing ghosts as a teenager to becoming entangled in an ancient supernatural conflict has transformed Vivian from victim to someone discovering her own agency. Despite the manipulations of powerful beings from multiple realms, something within her refuses to be controlled, suggesting that the true power in this story may not lie with the Destroyers or the Council, but with a young woman who continues to defy the limitations others try to impose upon her.